The reality is the people that care about you are, they want to help you. And that's really the first step to like really changing the way your life is and your mental health is. So, you know, taking that first step is like really brave. And even though it's really tough, you know, that's the way you have to go. I mean, you have to.
All right, welcome to the Monarch Experience Podcast. I am your host, Mr. Ancona. Here at the Monarch Experience Podcast, we are all about giving students the platform to be able to voice their opinions about what matters most to them. Today, the thing that matters the most, we're talking about mental health and mental health awareness. Usually pretty lighthearted on the podcast. We're usually goofing around, talking about ridiculous things and would you rathers. And we try to get a little deep here or there. But this is an episode that for 5 years, I've actually had students every year basically asking, hey, can you do an episode on anxiety? Hey, can you do an episode on depression? Can you do an episode on just mental health? And I've never felt entirely comfortable for a number of reasons. Stars didn't align right. And boy, do we have a star for you today. We've got Amanda Ritchie, one of my former students, an amazing, amazing human being that I've kept in touch with over the last few years. She's currently studying to be a social worker. She is working in schools or in a school right now. And mental health in general has been a passion of hers and one thing that she feels is incredibly important. So let's dive right into it. We got an amazing conversation with Amanda coming up, and I can't wait for you to hear it right here at the Monarch Experience Podcast. So here we've got the former Memorial student from not too long ago, but also many years ago, depending on perspective, and one of the most amazing students that I've ever had the pleasure of getting to teach, Amanda Ritchie. Amanda, how are you? It's amazing having you on the podcast and getting an opportunity to reconnect with an amazing former student. What's going
on? Awesome. It's awesome to be here. I'm so excited that I get to talk on this podcast and share a little bit about mental health, which is a topic that a lot of people don't really want to talk about, but we're going to talk about it and we're gonna have some fun with it, I think, along the way. So I'm really excited to be here and to reconnect with Mr. Ancona.
Is that a subtle jab at me? Not a lot of people want to talk about it. And before we hit record, I was explaining how we've been doing the podcast for 5 years, and for 5 years, every year there's been either a student or a group of students that have basically said, you should do one on anxiety, you should do one on depression, you should do one on mental health in general. And I'm like, ew, no, I can't, I don't want to. I'm too scared. I don't know how we can. The podcast is usually pretty light, and we're usually pretty goofy. We don't take anything really too seriously, and you know, we'll try to have fun with this one. But definitely a serious topic, and one that I'm really proud to be able to do, and to have someone so amazing like you on.
So excited to be here.
but yeah, I appreciate the little jab at me. People don't want to talk about it. Talk to us a little bit about your background and what you're studying and what you're currently kind of in.
Yeah, so I'm currently a senior at Georgian Court University. I'm studying social work, and I'm more focused on like the mental health end of it, more like counseling, and I do want to end up in a school helping like younger kids who might be dealing with like mental health issues. So this is why it's kind of a bigger topic for me, because I do think that it needs to be talked about a little bit more in schools, and there needs to be a little bit like little more changes in terms of how we go about helping students within schools. So it's definitely a topic that I'm passionate about.
How would you define what mental health is?
Yeah, when a lot of people think about mental health, they think like how people think and how people feel and their emotions, but like it's much more than that. It's also like how we like handle like stress and how we cope with other, like how we cope with situations and interact with other people. You know, it's how we think about ourselves. Do you think that you're worthy, or are you able to work with other people well? Like, is there something that's like getting in the way of that? So there's a lot more than just, oh, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling anxious. So it's definitely like a big topic, a big broad, there's a broad umbrella there.
What are some ways to taking care of it? What are some long-term, short-term, daily kind of things that people can do? Dealing with, obviously, you know, when you say a big umbrella, there's probably a ton of different mental health issues or disorders that, you know, would fit different, not requirements, what's the word? Different suggestions, maybe, is the right word. What would, in general, what are some, like, just good mental health things to do to upkeep?
Yeah, I mean, mainly I feel like we would focus on, like, anxiety and depression, because those are kind of the biggest mental health concerns, especially among, like, youth. So, I mean, like, short-term exercise is one of the best physical activities, because they release those feel-good endorphins, and immediately you're feeling your mental health's improving without you even realizing. You know, just positive self-talk, kind of just, like, giving those, like, affirmations, saying to yourself, like, okay, I can do this, I'm good enough, I'm worthy, I'm capable, like, those things, because a lot of times we like to tear ourselves down, and that's immediately kind of what's going to get in the way of, like, optimizing your mental health.
It's like the first thing we say in any kind of, any type of obstacle or struggle, or when we get any kind of result that's not ideal, right? It's like, yeah. Oh, I suck. Oh, I'm no good at this. Like, we do it so much more. I mean, I hear it, like, constantly. Sometimes it's even maybe masked as a joke. It's like, I'm just awful. I'm just terrible at this. I hear it all the time whenever we conference, like, I'm a terrible writer, or my conclusion sucked. And it's like, no, like, you realize that, one, this is a process. Like, all these things are evolving and you're getting better at them. We could focus on that a little bit instead of trying to tear ourselves down.
Definitely. Yeah. And I know that I even remember being in your classroom. Positive self-talk was the biggest part of being in your classroom. Because I would say one thing and I would say, oh, I am so bad at this. And you would be like, no, don't say that. Like, so immediately that's what comes to my head. And that's, I think, one of the biggest parts of really, like, managing your mental health, like, on a short term basis. But I think more of, like, a long term thing, I mean, we would say, like, get a little bigger, maybe just having support around you, like those friends, that family, communicating with them, knowing, like, reminding yourself that you have that support all the time, and seeing a therapist or looking into a therapist to get more of, like, a structural type of help, because, you know, you always have your friends and your family as, like, a go-to thing, but you need that structure with, like, a therapist if you really, like, you know, just somebody to talk to. Doesn't have to be anything, you know, the stigma's there, but
yeah, I think there definitely is a stigma. I think even just the way we kind of talk about seeing a therapist has this, like, oh, you can't do it yourself. And I mean, I like to think, like, no, I can't do anything by myself or on my own. So the help of anybody just to process things is wonderfully valid or valuable. You know, I've heard this year even just kind of like a few students, again, I think a lot of things kind of come up, they bubble to the surface in the form of jokes, where they'll say things like, oh, you know, this would then cause someone to, like, in their writing when they're analyzing, I think, like, anger or something, they're like, oh, this would cause someone to need to see therapy. And I'm like, the wording there feels so
yeah,
negative.
Definitely.
Why is that the case?
I don't know where the stigma came from, but I think, honestly, we are close to, like, getting closer to, like, stopping the stigma, because I think more people are coming out and saying, okay, I'm going to therapy. Like, you hear it more, I feel like, with, like, celebrities, and you just hear more with people talking about it. I think if more people just were to be open about it in their daily lives, then other people wouldn't feel so scared when someone says, oh, I need to go to therapy. Like, it's not this big, big, scary thing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, and also I like, I think the more we realize that we're not alone with something, I think the easier it is. And, you know, it's like, it almost feels like it's like a game of chicken where you're hoping that like other people around you will admit like, yeah, I go see a therapist. And then exactly. You're like, oh. Oh, I do too. You're
yeah.
Like, oh, I could finally share. I do too. And you're like, oh, he does also. And she does too. And it's like, yeah, like it can be helpful. It can be tremendously helpful in so many different ways for a lot of different people. Where do you think that the structure would help someone? Like, let's say a teen struggling with, pick one, anxiety. Yeah. Like where would long term or and also short term there be benefits for someone to go and see a therapist or be able to talk to someone? Because I ask that also because one of the great revelations I've had with this podcast is realizing that parents listen too, which I never thought would be the case. And they listen because they were like, I'm trying to get better inside of my teenager's head. So what better way than to hear them talk about Star Wars or whatever? So maybe not just for teenagers to hear it, but also for potentially their parents. Like, where is that benefit long term and short term for seeing someone?
I think just changing the way that the person might be thinking about a certain situation, kind of like altering kind of their thought pattern, you know, with that idea, like we said before, just kind of minimizing that that negative self-talk and like realizing that it's just a thought, like it's not really like what it is. It's not what you're thinking. Like there's more to it. So it's
just the thought.
Changing that thought pattern, making yourself think about a situation a different way so that you can tackle it.
I love that. So obviously that's both long-term and short-term. Where do you think, I kind of, one final thought on the therapy idea. Where do you see... you said structure. Where do you see a person getting that structure? What does that look like from a therapist compared to, you said, the support from like family or friends? Where does that differ?
Well, support from family and friends is like awesome because, you know, they know you on like a more personal level, but they don't have that professional kind of like mindset where they can kind of like detect what technique or something might actually really be good, like what intervention might help like a certain teen dealing with a specific problem. So I think just being able to go into therapy is that sense of structure, is them getting that like every week, that professional support where they can build that plan, where they can really like tackle a situation.
And I think sometimes what could be really helpful is they're not too close to the situation.
Right.
You know, like when you're, it makes me feel like, you know, when your family compliments you, it's kind of like goes in one ear and out the other. And then when like a complete stranger compliments you, you're like, oh my God, even if it's the same compliment that your family or close relatives have been trying to tell you for so long. And then you hear it from like one random dude or dudette on the street and you're like singing about like, oh, they thought I was this. And everyone's like, yeah, we've been saying that
exactly.
For years.
That is so true. Cause I can even attest to that, like saying my mom telling me one thing, being like, you need to do this. And I'll be like, no, like, no. And then like somebody will tell me, like my therapist will be like, do this. And I'll be like, you know what? Yeah, I should do that. So.
And then you'll tell mom, I'm saying, you know what I realized I should do? I'm going to start doing this. And they just sit there like seething, like I've been saying that for like 4 years. And you're like, have you? I don't know. I don't know. It just doesn't. You need another voice. Like honestly, sometimes just another voice like is what gets definitely. It across, right? And same thing. I love that. This is kind of like an ongoing tradition we have, is that we're always bashing our parents on the podcast.
Really?
For some way or another, we've just, like 60-something episodes and pretty much like 50 of them, somehow we found a way to kind of like knock our parents. And I love that, you know, 15 minutes in, Amanda, you have done that. So when mom listens now, she's going to be like, how could you say that?
She knows it, though. She knows already.
Yeah, of course. That's okay. Your mom's amazing. Okay, so let's say this starts to crack the surface of like, no, I don't want to. No, there's a stigma, or for whatever reason or another. Where and how does someone start making the first initial steps to start reaching out?
I think really it's just reaching out. You can reach out to really anyone, but I would specifically say like a trusted adult, a teacher, somebody who is able to get you the help that you need. You know, people find it really, they think they're being like annoying asking for help. But the reality is the people that care about you are, they want to help you. And that's really the first step to like really changing the way your life is and your mental health is. So, you know, taking that first step is like really brave. And even though it's really tough, you know, that's the way you have to go. I mean, you have to.
I love that. It's so tough. And it does take a lot of courage. So let's say you're on the other side. You see someone who you think might be struggling. You know, what, how do you approach that? Because obviously the "you need help" is not the way to do that. And that's kind of the generation that I grew up in, where it was kind of like a dismissive, like slang, you know, going back to the stigma, right? Of like, "Oh, you need help." And then it was kind of almost like, "Go ahead, you figure it out. It's your problem." Which thankfully, you know, we've grown as a society and as a world so much where that's no longer the case, where it's there are people that are not just saying you need help, but trying to actually help and lead you there. What does that look like for someone who's struggling?
I would say just finding a time and a place where you can talk to this person individually, you know, not a place where they're going to, it's, there's so many people and they're going to get embarrassed. Let's go in a room where you, there's no time limit and you can ask really like the person, just a simple question, how are you doing? Where, you know, they're more likely to honestly answer the question, because just having that space, they're more likely to be honest with you than if you're in a room with a bunch of people just saying, "Oh, hey, how's it going?" So if you go into like a room like that and you ask, "How are you getting by?" Or, and then if they do say that they're struggling or something like that, then that's when you have to kind of like guide it in a way where you need to tell them that it's important to talk to like a trusted adult. Or you can say that I'm willing to go with to a trusted adult and we can talk about this and work through this together.
And no judgment, right? Like that is the hardest, or no solving their
problem.
Absolutely
not. Like the goal really of that part of it is just to listen, to truly listen, because that's probably all the person really wants. No judgment, and just having that open space where they can just say what they want.
Right, because I think it's just, it's so natural for us to like try to solve, especially with people we care about, right? Like we're like, "Oh, I could fix this," or, you know, "I went through something like that similarly when I was on." You're like, no. Don't do that. Don't compare. This is not about you and how you overcame whatever it is that happened to you 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, unfortunately, as much as we want to, because we want to try and relate to the person, like we don't want to make it seem like we're making it about us. So you do want to try and just focus on them. It's not even so much as important as what you say. It's more that you're really listening to them and
couldn't
reiterate that they have support from you and that you're willing to find more support for them.
Yeah, I think sometimes like not having the answer or the answers or the way to solve it, it makes us feel like, well, then, but what do I do then? Like if I just listen all this time and then I'm just kind of like, all right, like, then what? Like, I'm not helping. It's like, no, that actually is potentially more helpful, because you can just let the person. I love what you said about no time limit, because that's so important too. You know, if someone feels like they're rushed, they're not going to open up, especially if they know that you might be rushed.
Yeah, definitely. No rushing. Just they have all the time that they need. And you just make sure that you pick a time. If you want to talk to them, you pick a time where you don't have any plans or anything. You're just, you have that time, and that time's for them.
So important. So if somebody were to be, you know, it's hard, because it's like, how do you differentiate sometimes between someone just having a rough week or someone who's just got a couple of things going on and they're just trying to work through them, versus someone who, you know, really their mental health is a concern of yours? How do you distinguish between the two?
So, yeah, everybody has their ups and downs, especially at a young age, that age group, it happens. But when certain symptoms persist for like 2 weeks, then that can kind of indicate that there's more of a mental health concern. So it would be like certain symptoms such as like a person being irritable, like constantly worrying, having panic attacks, feeling worthless, like isolating themselves. Maybe they're not as interested in activities that they were previously. And then most importantly with that, like really, it's trusting your gut. You kind of just see that something's off. And that's when it's like, okay, I think I need to go in there and ask maybe how the person's doing.
Yeah, for sure. The 2 weeks part, I think, is really key too, right? Because there's natural ebbs and flows. We have moods based off of so many different things: sleep, how much work you have, what your friend said the night before. Like, all of these things are going to be a factor. But when it's persistent, I think that's a great way of wording it. What about the winter? Do you feel like you see more symptoms of depression or anxiety in the winter?
Yes, definitely. That's like more of like there's like seasonal depression, where people just it just happens in the winter, like immediately they're
What's that look like?
kind of like the same symptoms, just being kind of isolating yourself, not being interested in activities that you were interested, maybe like hopelessness, feelings like that. I mean, I think it's more so depression than it is anxiety.
What do you suggest for people who might feel like they kind of succumb to the winter, what is it called, the winter blues or seasonal
Seasonal
depression?
depression.
Because I know that the lack of sun is what tends to do it for me. Like, the fact that it's 4:30 and it's pitch black, and I'm waking up and it's pitch black, and there's just like no sun. And I know I'm at my best when I have a lot of exposure to the sun. Like, I mean, obviously there's science behind that, but I know that for me, like, sun is important. And I know there's other people too that may be like, yeah, I never realized that. Like, I kind of feel just in a funk, I guess, in the winter. What do you suggest for people like that?
I think it's more so the same thing, and I like kind of just being aware that like this is what happens in the winter, and that you need to focus more on your self-care and focus more on things that are enjoyable to you. And if you are aware that this is what happens in the winter, make that apparent for you and, maybe schedule a time where you're able to like work through that on your own or work through that with somebody else, such as like a therapist or a friend. Like, just say, that it's coming up and you're like, oh, the winter's coming. This is when I get really upset. This is where it all starts. Like, that's when like you can like start planning ahead and saying like that I need to maybe make an appointment with my therapist or maybe talk to my friends a little bit more.
And the nice thing is, we know when the winter is coming. It's pretty scheduled
It is,
every year,
yes.
right? So you can start catching on and go, maybe I should. All right,
It's time.
it's like Thanksgiving time. It's time. Yeah, or it's like right after, right around the holidays, which is triggering for a lot of people. Like, okay, it's time. So where do you see social media's influence on mental health? Because, obviously every year goes by and we're more and more on social media, and that influence, while it could be good, I kind of see it as more purely bad. But what's your take on this?
It can be. I think social media can be both good and bad. It gets a little bit tricky when it comes to youth because, we specifically crave like social approval. Like we rely heavily on that. So like if
Oh,
we're
yeah.
like they need that in order to be like satisfied with, who they are. So sometimes it gets tough. It can definitely like fuel anxiety and depression, if you're online and you're scrolling Instagram and you see that somebody went to a party and you weren't at the party, That could immediately fuel some anxiety or like some fear of missing out because you weren't there and you feel like your life, you're comparing your life to somebody else's. So it can definitely contribute to more.
Or comparing your life to someone else's, what's the way to phrase it? Like you're comparing your life to how someone portrays their life. Which is like very different than, you know, comparing is dangerous to begin with, right? But comparing your life to how someone is, what they're sharing, maybe is the better way to phrase it. That can be so dangerous, right? Because you're picking and choosing what you want out there. And I think I'm a little bit cynical with social media. Like I think anytime you're posting something, you are deciding, I want to share this. Like that's a conscious decision. So much of their identity is, whether people are realizing it or not, like so much of their identity is tied to how others see them or how others, you know, perceive them. And that's so fragile. So it sounds like you're on the same boat as me with social media being like horribly damaging.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. And like you said, like, it's not all the truth. I mean, just because you see somebody smiling and happy on social media, that doesn't mean that, you know, they're in a good mental place. So, like, you have to be aware of that, too. And, like, it's hard because, you know, it is, like, a form of connection. Like, it's a good way to connect with other people, but it can never really replace that real, like, in-person, like, human connection that we need in order to kind of keep us mentally stable.
Could not agree more. I mean, and I can't bash it, right? Because like, look, you being on this podcast and us getting to talk and reconnect, like that is a byproduct of social media connecting people. So like, I'm aware of that. And you know, for any listeners that are like, don't you like promote the podcast and stuff on social media? And like, I keep in touch with former students through Snapchat where like they just follow the account just to keep in touch. So like, I get that. Totally well aware of that. Those are wonderful things. But, you know, I recently, I'm like a big nerd for like brain science stuff. And like, I just love all that stuff. I love knowing like why and how the brain and like the physiological aspects of it are influencing like our social behavior and things. I just finished listening to this unbelievable podcast by this neuroscientist. And what was so interesting was he was talking about the like the effects of the brain when we're scrolling. And like I think I'm sure you and every single listener has found themselves just scrolling for the sake of scrolling and trying to figure out. And I wonder, again, for like our sixth grade, sixth, seventh, and eighth even audience, like I wonder how many of them maybe are aware of this. But that feeling of you're scrolling and you're scrolling. And then as you're scrolling, you're kind of realizing, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Like I'm not getting at anything. I'm not looking for anything. I'm not even being entertained by it. And I thought it was so, you've been there, right?
Definitely.
And like, me too. And, but like, I think it's so interesting because like, you know, we're supposed to be getting pleasure from like finding new things and like the novel stimulus of like, ooh, a post or this was funny or someone commented on this or someone interacted with my account. But like really when we're scrolling like that, we're just desensitizing our brain to that dopamine that we're supposed to be getting from it, where we're getting less and less and less and less. And like I find myself sometimes being aware when I'm scrolling, realizing like, this is not good for me. Like I'm just kind of cranky and I'm not like actually feeling any better than when I'm, you know, ingesting information and going like, oh, okay, this was entertaining or this was good. I guess the first step is just recognizing that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we're all guilty of that in some way. I mean, I can definitely say that I am. So,
you know, I think that plays such a huge factor in our mental health with social media is, again, because like people were posting what they want. And you said it really... You said it best, like it's looking for social approval or like approval of our peers. And sometimes we do that by trying to post something. Oh, let me post this really cool picture because then that'll get people to like me more, or this funny post, and that'll get people to like me more. It's like this endless cycle. So how do we kind of navigate, you know, we said at the beginning like that we're making so much progress as a society with, getting rid of the stigma of mental health. Like, how do we continue doing that? What are some things that maybe we shouldn't do? What are some things that we should continue to do? What's your take?
I think just maybe continuing. I think honestly, just continue to talk about it and be open about it. I think this podcast is a great first step. Us just talking about it and us being loud and clear and saying that, you know, it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to see a therapist, and kind of making that clear to youth. Maybe speaking that to young people who maybe don't want to share or feel like they're struggling and they can't tell anybody. I think talking about that more within the school system is really, really big. And having maybe school staff be more open to talking about that with students as well, because that's where they learn best from you guys. They listen to you, and when they hear something from you, sometimes. I know sometimes I listen to you. When you had something real important to
sometimes.
Say, I was like, all right.
Wasn't often, but sometimes. Sometimes I had something important to say. Not sometimes you would listen.
Yeah, if it was something real important to say, then I would be like, okay, it's time to listen. But
I would try to preface most things with like, hey, Amanda, this is going to be important. You should be like, okay, now I'm going to listen.
Yeah, the rest of it, I just tuned out. I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. And for most people, they usually just tune it out, and I think that's okay. I've been doing that more often, just telling people, like, hey, this is going to be important, so that they know when I don't say it, just to, like, totally just shut down.
Yeah, I mean, just saying ahead of time, okay, this is important. Everybody listen. We're going to talk about this.
Obviously, talking more about it is going to be huge, and hopefully this podcast is really helpful with other people just knowing whatever they get out of it. I think they get out of it, whether that is better understanding how to approach someone, better understanding their own signs, better understanding the signs of someone else, or kind of how to talk about the subject. You know, I think when we're uncomfortable with something, I think sometimes we either have a tendency to dismiss it or not talk at all. And I think both of those things are really dangerous when it comes to people's mental health and being aware of their mental health, and also, you know, trying to break that stigma or continue to break that stigma, right? It's never enough. Resources that you think are valuable for our audience to hear?
Some resources, we can say a crisis text line. Simply all you have to text is HOME in all caps to 741-741, and then you're going to get connected to a crisis counselor. They're like a volunteer. And it's anonymous, it's confidential, unless you say something life-threatening. But they're really just there to get you into a calm and a cool space. And then once they recognize that, the conversation will end. And then something similar to that, you can give a call to Second Floor Youth Helpline. They're also, like, trained professionals, volunteers that can help you through, like, daily challenges. Also confidential, anonymous. Unless life threatening.
Of course. Amanda, so amazing, so helpful, so appreciative too. Thank you for coming back and or coming on the podcast. And I'm sure you're always welcome back again. And I'm sure we'll do this again some other
time.
Thank
you for having me. I hope that people got some good info about mental health awareness.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was incredible. Maybe down the line, we do another episode where we get a little bit deeper. You know, we kind of really only scratch the surface with mental health and taking care of one's mental health. But potentially, maybe we come back and we do another episode maybe on anxiety or depression or specific mental health disorders that to help better understand each individual mental health disorder. But until then, make sure that you're following us on our social media platforms. Remember, you can experience the Monarch Experience podcast on any platform where you can get podcasts, whether it's Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, or any other place that you can possibly imagine. Follow us on social media for our TikTok account at MonarchXP, Snapchat at the Monarch Experience Podcast, and of course our Twitter at TheMonarchXP. And until then, stay safe, stay hungry. See ya.